Hello, everyone, and welcome to the inaugural episode of Catalyst Stories, the podcast. I'm John Hino, your host for today's episode, and today we're honored to have a young man who's been on the other side of podcast interviews. You probably know him as the voice and the host of the of Catalyst's first ever podcast, the popular Engage to Flourish podcast. He's the director of Engage Ministries here at Catalyst Christian Community. He's also the CEO of Ahava Design, which is the church's design firm and business. And they've, speaking personally, they've done some awesome workbooks for myself and my company over the years. Great work. So if you have not only design work or graphics works, but if you want people that will walk beside you and help you to step in to your calling, and I look at them more as family and consultants than I do the business that I use. So please reach out to Ahava Design for any of your needs. Damon is married to Tracy, and together they have three children, son Dylan, daughters Karis and Riley. And with that, I am thrilled to welcome Damon Gohada to the inaugural Catalyst Stories podcast. So welcome, Damon.
Thanks, John. I'm really excited to be here, and I feel very honored that I get to be the first on your podcast.
Yeah, well, you know, I really felt, Damon, it was only appropriate to honor you by having you as the first guest on the podcast. You have blessed so many people within our church family, myself included, by allowing us to hear and learn about others and their stories here at Catalyst. So through your Engage to Flourish podcast. So thanks for blessing all of us.
Oh yeah, it's been a really fun journey for me. And I just get really excited just to hear different people's experiences of and what God's doing in their lives too.
Yeah. Well, we're all blessed and inspired. So keep up the great work.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah.
So I want to jump right into your testimony, starting with your grandmother. And I know your grandmother has been an amazing influence on you and your entire family through the years. She was the organist and pianist for the Gardena Valley Baptist Church. It seemed like forever, serving faithfully for many, many years. And you once saw your grandmother, who I think was probably well into her 70s, maybe even her 80s at the time, attending an event for young people. And so talk about that event and what that event taught you and what your grandmother meant to you.
Okay, so yeah, let me give a little bit of context to this. So when I was early college, some of my friends at church, we would want to hang out and we'd want to go to learn more about God in different places. And so we had made some friends at Gardena Valley Baptist. And so they invited us out to their evening service, which was made for young adults, called Solomon's Porch, which was on Sunday evenings. And so a group of us would go from Cerritos Baptist, and we would go to just worship together with our brothers and sisters from Gardena Valley. And so we went, and when the first time I go, the atmosphere was, you know, darker. There were couches and candles, and it was a cool atmosphere. But it was kind of darker, and so I'm sitting there, and the first worship song is starting to play, and I look across, and sitting right in front of me is my grandma. And you know, this is a young adult service, and so most of the people are my age, young early 20s.
Okay.
And she's by far the oldest person there, maybe by 30-40 years even. And so I'm just sitting there, and I'm trying to worship, but my eyes just keep going over, that's for sure my grandma. What is she doing here? You know, and so after the service is over, they turn the lights on, and I just make a beeline over to my grandma, and I say, hey, grandma, it's so good to see you. Like, I was really not expecting you to be here. Mm-hmm. And then so her response to me was, you know, I want our young people at our church to know that the older generation supports them. And so I'm here to show my support for the young pastor who's leading this group.
Yeah.
And I want him to know that, you know, us old timers, we care, and we want them to know that we support them. And then she was like, you know, I don't really care for the worship music. I'm more of a hymns person. You know, I played organ. And so I'll try to get here a little bit later on purpose. But I want them to know that I'm here and I'm ready to learn, and I want to hear what they have to say, and I want them to know that we support them.
Wow. You know, when you tell that story, the word that comes to mind is legacy. You know, something that's handed down, like a generational blessing that's passed down that really benefits the future generation, something that I think is so powerful. How important was that legacy that your grandmother passed down to you and your family? I mean, it's almost like I can see it in your mom, Connie, and your auntie and your uncle, Cyril. It's just like it's been passed down.
Yeah, for me, I feel like that's been such a huge part of my spiritual journey. Been the legacy that's been passed down to me. And you know, this is just one story of my grandma's faith, but I look at her whole life as just an inspiration to me of her journey to understand more and more of God's grace. You know, an example of that is when I was growing up, I used to love it when grandma would come over to make dinner for us. And sometimes, you know, as a growing boy, I would get hungry before dinner time. And I would say, "Hey, grandma, I'm hungry. Can I have a cookie?" And her response would always be, "You know, Damon, cookies are, that's for after dinner. If you're hungry, why don't you eat a piece of bread?" And I say, "Ew, that, I don't want any bread." And she's like, "Well, if it doesn't taste good, put some butter on it." So that's kind of what I grew up with grandma. And then later on, you know, this is as she's getting older, and go to a family function, and it's before the mealtime, and she's walking around passing around cookies. And I say, "What, grandma, what are you doing? You're passing around cookies. I thought we're not allowed to have cookies before a meal." And she said, "You know, there's always room for one cookie." And so right when she said that, I felt like the Lord told me she's experiencing more and more of my grace, even in her old age. And she's growing in her relationship with me. And that's something that I have for her. And that's something that is available to you to continue to grow in understanding my grace and my love you continue to get older. And so my grandma throughout her whole life, you know, I have a ton of stories. I don't know if we have time for all of them today. We don't. But just for me, a lot of people will tell me, you know, "You're so blessed. Your grandfather was a pastor at Gardena Valley Baptist Church."
Yes.
"It must be so cool to have that as part of your legacy," which is true, and I really value that. But at the same time, my grandfather died when I was young too, and so, for me, I see so much of the way that the Lord changed my grandma and grew in my grandma and just her spiritual journey. That it's like, wow, like I'm blessed because I had both. I had my grandfather who was pastor, but then I also had my grandmother who. Her heart was so much for knowing the Lord, loving the Lord, and just really setting that example for us, what it looks like to be someone that really is just in love with the Lord.
Yes. And so thinking about you now you have three young children. How does your grandmother and grandmother's lessons and things you've learned from them, how is that relevant and significant to you today?
Okay, so one thing that's really, really cool to me
is
that kind of like I shared, my grandma used to come over and I used to try to pick her brain and talk to her about some spiritual things.
Oh, neat.
And so one of the favorite stories that I had from my grandma was the story about how she met my grandfather. And so it was really an interesting story because, you know, my grandmother, she grew up at the time around World War II.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that was about the time when she was supposed to be getting married or, you know, that age, the age of getting married. So she was about 25 around that time. Okay. And so, you know, she wasn't married at 25. And back then, if you weren't married, then you probably weren't going to get married. So they used to call you an old maid. And so
at 25,
if you weren't married yet, you were probably not getting married back then. This is like the 40s, right?
Yeah.
So
my
grandma said, it was about that time, and she said she prayed to God. She said, "God, you know, I'm learning my piano. I can be a teacher. I can serve you as, you know, leading worship and things like that. So if you don't want me to get married, I'm cool. I'm okay with that." Then she said, "But God, if you want me to get married, then I have three criteria for a husband. So the first one was that he had to be a Japanese person or a Japanese man. The second one was that he had to be a Christian. And the third one was that he had to be a Christian that was so in love with Jesus that she could submit and honor and follow him.
Wow.
And she was someone that had gone to extra Bible school and she just was in love with the Lord.
Yeah.
And so she thought there was no one in the whole world that was like that. Because, you know, even now, like, statistics show that less than 1% of Japanese people are Christians.
Christian, yeah.
Right? So for her to find a Japanese man who was a Christian, who was not only just a Christian, but was someone that she could honor and submit and follow, she's like, there's no one in the whole world.
It's going to be a tall order to fill.
Yeah. And so then the war came and she was sent to one of the camps. And in one of the camps, she actually met someone who was a Japanese man who had gone to seminary in Japan. And like, who thinks of people going to seminary in Japan, right?
Yeah.
Like,
wow.
So he had gone to seminary in Japan and he got TB while he was over there. So they sent him back home, and then he was taken to one of the camps too, and that's where they met, in the hospital at one of the camps.
Wow.
So that's how they met, and she originally said when she first saw him, she thought that he was nothing special, but the Lord had different plans for them.
Yeah, yeah.
And they ended up getting married and having four kids, the oldest one being my mom.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, you know, the way that I like to tell the story is that my mom and my dad fell in love. They had three kids, which was me and my siblings. And then one day when I was driving around with one of my friends, she had been talking about how she thought she was going to be an old maid. And that kind of made some light bulbs go off. And I felt like God said, keep an eye on her because she's pretty special. And we ended up getting married and then we had three kids.
Yeah, yeah.
So the cool thing about this story, though, it now has a totally different meaning for me. When I was growing up, it was cool because it helped me to understand my legacy and, you know, just my grandma's faith in wanting a husband that she could submit to and honor, that loved the Lord that much.
Yeah, yeah.
But now I have a different appreciation for it because I told that story to my kids one time as a bedtime story. And then they said they wanted to hear that story over and over and over again.
Wow.
And they love that story.
Yeah.
And then sometimes, you know, when I'm tired, I'll end the story with, oh, yeah, great grandma. And we called him Ji-chan. Great grandma and Ji-chan, they got married and the end. And then my kids would be like, that's not the end of the story. That's not the end of the story. You got to keep going, right? Because they want to hear the generational legacy.
Yes, yes.
And how do we get to them? And right, so they won't let me finish until I say, then mommy and daddy had three kids, Dylan, Karis, and Riley. And so really what that helped me to understand too was have a greater understanding of the Bible and why the genealogies are in the Bible. Because, you know, originally those were oral traditions that they were spoken out. And so I'm sure all those kids were like, how do you get to us? How does God get to us? We start with Adam and Eve, and how do we get to us today? And those are some of the same questions that my kids are asking now.
Wow.
Is how do we get to, how does this story lead to where we are now?
Yeah.
And so it's a real tangible story of the actual legacy that was passed down.
Yes, yes.
And so I love that story even more now.
Wow. Wow. That's great. That's amazing. So I just have one other question. Does that mean that your kids are allowed to have the cookies before the mealtime?
Every once in a while, we'll let them have something before dinner time.
There you go. There you go.
Actually, I think to be more realistic, it depends on who they're asking.
Ah, okay. So
mommy's a little bit more gracious than daddy is.
Oh, okay. Okay. So I see a lot of the good things have been passed down, but some things are still a little tough to try and get there. We're not at grandma's level yet, but maybe someday when you're a grandpa, you'll get there.
Well, there's always room for us to grow spiritually, right? So
there you go. There you go. So transitioning on to another person who is influential in your life. You had so many influential people, your grandmother, and sometimes we don't realize until much later how God places specific individuals in our lives at the right time, and ones that believe in us, who inspire us to become all that we're created and called to be. And Damon, for you, one of those individuals was your high school basketball coach at Pacifica High School, Coach Becker, and how he saw something in you that maybe you didn't see in yourself at the time. So can you talk about your basketball experience and how Coach Becker and his influence in your life guides you today?
Okay, so first off, I need a little bit of context.
Yeah.
So for me, my journey with basketball started actually at Cerritos Baptist Church in the parking lot.
Oh, okay.
After service. And so each Sunday, you know, my age group, after service, we'd go outside and we'd want to play basketball. So sometimes there were 10 people, sometimes there were 11, and I was always picked last. So if there were 10 people, I was the last one picked. If there were 11, I'd be the one that was sitting out watching. And so that's not the greatest place to be, you know, like when you feel like you're a semi-athletic person and...
And in church of all places.
Exactly. I mean, so it's
right?
not even
Isn't
like
the last should become first, right?
you know, and so it's not even like this is a place where there's a lot of people that actually play basketball. And so, you know, for myself, it was kind of like an ego hit, right? Like I can't even get picked. If there's times where I'm not even getting picked at church. Like I'm the last pick at church. Like it's not even like during PE or anything. It's like, this is at church.
Yeah.
So that's where my journey started. I wouldn't even get picked at church. So for me, because that was a weekly thing that we did, we tried to play basketball at church. I was like, I'm determined to get picked seventh or eighth, right? So I said, okay.
Got to move up a little bit.
Yeah, I just really wanted to be able to play. I didn't want to sit on the sidelines anymore. So I thought, okay, high school basketball season's coming up. Maybe if I go to a couple tryouts, even if I get cut, I'll learn something, and then maybe I'll get picked seventh or eighth. Because, you know, again, it's at church. I don't feel like the bar is that high. So maybe if I just attend a couple of tryouts, then maybe I can get picked seventh or eighth. So I go to one of my friends who's on the basketball team, and I say, okay, you know, I want to try out. What do I need to do? So he said, okay, well, there's tryouts on these days, and then there's also conditioning. It's like, but you're trying out for JV, and so conditioning is optional, so you don't need to go to that. And you can't hang anyway. You can't even – conditioning is super hard. Our coach is really hard. You're not even able to hang with that anyway. And, you know, so for me, I'm a pretty competitive person. So when I heard him say that, I was like, wait, are you telling me I can't do something? No, I'll be there. So the first day of conditioning comes, and – this is even before tryouts are even started or anything. So they have conditioning. They have everyone gathering together. Everyone, you know, and it's the beginning of conditioning. So a lot of people are there. So the coach has us do some things just to see where everybody's at. There's a lot of people he's never seen before. So it gets to this point where during practice or during conditioning where he kind of splits everyone into two groups. One is like the lower group, that people that are not in as good shape, and then there's people that are the varsity and then people that are in better shape. I was like the last person in the better group. And so my friend, and really this is all just running. And if you know me now, I'm a runner. So that's one thing I can do.
Yeah,
I can run. So my ability to run helped me to get into that group.
Mm-hmm.
So my friend who was on the team was like, wow, like you're with all of these guys that are on varsity right now, like you should try to do something with that, you know, like stand out. And it's like, okay, cool. Like I'm just trying not to die right now. I'm not in shape at all either. So I'm just trying my best and trying not to die. And so it gets to the end of conditioning and we do something called an Indian run. So in an Indian run, you get into groups. And so he had us into two groups. There was the slower group and the faster group. And then everybody gets in a line and you travel a certain distance, which we were going to run around the whole school and end at the starting line. And then in your group, you'd get in a single file line and the person in the back would sprint to the front. And then when they get to the front, the next person in the back would sprint to the front. So there's always someone sprinting to the front. Oh, and then the group is trying to quickly get around the school.
Yeah.
So, again, this is my first time being around all these people, especially, and these are all the very athletic basketball players. So, I don't know mentally where I'm at during this time, but I do remember the coach saying, all right, varsity, you guys, you better not lose to the slower guys. You better like destroy them. So there's kind of that pressure, like, I better keep up because know I'm like the last person out of the whole group.
Yeah.
So he says, go, we start running. We're running around the school, and kind of on the straightaway back, I don't know, again, I don't know where my mind is, but they say go. So, you know, I'm really, what that's supposed to mean is the person in the back sprint to the front.
Sprint to the front. Okay. Yeah,
that's what go means. But for some reason I thought go meant like, okay, this is the end. Like, we all need to sprint so we don't lose to the other group.
Oh.
So I just like take off and I just start sprinting. And then I beat everybody by quite a bit because everybody's still doing the Indian run. And I just like sprinted to the end. Again, I don't know what my brain is doing. So the next day I go to school and my friend that's on the team comes up and he goes, man, you made a real impression on the coach. And I was like, what are you talking about? He's like, yeah, coach gave me a ride home yesterday. And all he wanted to do the whole time we're driving is he talked about you. He's like asking questions like, do you play basketball? How, you know, what are you like? And I was like, okay, so what did you tell him? And he goes, you know, I told him that you don't play basketball. You're not good at basketball, but you're smart. You're smart. And I was like, okay, well, at least he knows I'm smart. So then that was kind of like the first impression day. So conditioning was an optional thing for junior varsity. So I was trying out for junior varsity. So a lot of the other guys didn't show up to a lot of stuff, but I didn't do anything else. And I thought, okay, well, maybe I'll have a better chance of making the team, even if I'm not good at basketball, just by showing up to stuff. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so I would go every day. And as we got closer to season, you know, Coach Becker, he pulled me aside one day and he goes, hey, you know, I haven't been at the lower level tryouts. I'm the varsity coach. I haven't been going to those things. So I don't know how you're doing in tryouts or anything, but if you get cut, come talk to me because there's a place for you in this program. You've shown up to everything. Mm-hmm. I love how hard you're working. Yeah. You're doing a good job. Like, I don't know anything about how good you are as a basketball player, but we'll make a spot for you somewhere. And I was like, wow, like he really doesn't know how bad I am at basketball, because he would have said for sure, like, you're going to get cut or something. But when he said that to me, that just really set me on a different course than I thought I was going to go on. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, so that year went on. I played JV. Actually, I really sat on the bench on JV. But, you know, for Coach Becker, that was something that he would continually do in my life, was that he would call out something that I didn't even know I had. You know, and recognize things in me that I didn't know I had, and he'd try to call them out and recognize like things in me, just that even my work ethic, mm-hmm. that I don't know other coaches that would do that. And I've been a basketball coach, and I've been a coach in other sports, and I know a lot of other coaches that wouldn't even recognize some of those types of things.
Yeah.
That they would just say, oh yeah, they're not good, so let's just let them go. You know, but he called that out of me. And so, interestingly enough, the next year, similar situation, I was expecting, okay, I'm going to play JV again. I'm not very good. I know I can do all the conditioning stuff and I can do that. And so it got to a point where he had a parent meeting before the season was going to start. And our varsity team was kind of smaller. And so there were some guys that were going to be moving up and down.
Yeah.
And playing JV, playing varsity, just different things. And so he said, okay, there's some people that are going to be moving up and down and some people that are going to be on the team for the whole season. And when he said, and he was listing out the roster for the people that were going to be on this whole season, he said my name. And my dad looked at me like, what are you talking about? Have you seen this guy play basketball? And I was looking at my dad the same way. Like, I think he said he made a mistake. He said, these are going to be the people that are going to be on JV the whole season and not... But he said my name. And so we went up to him after and he goes, you know, I'm able to push the other guys harder because of how hard you work. And so I need you on the varsity to be able to push those guys harder. And that's going to make our team better. And so he recognized that in me And we ended up winning a couple tournaments that season. Yeah. Wow. I didn't get to play in those tournaments, but even after the tournament, after we'd win, he'd come up to me and say, "Hey, you know, we won because you pushed those other guys, and I could push them because you were working so hard. So you're a big part of our team." And he would always say things like that to me. So, you know, even though I wasn't someone that was contributing by scoring a lot of points, you know, he recognized that I did have value to our program and that I was able to help, you know, propel us to a new place.
Yeah.
And so,
yeah. Wow.
That really spoke a lot to me, and that I feel like that really shaped how I have been as a leader.
Yeah.
In terms of trying to look and see things in others that, you know, maybe most people wouldn't notice or most people wouldn't recognize, because that was done for me. And so I feel like that's been something that he instilled in me that has helped me to, you know, want to do that for other people.
Yeah.
So as a coach, those are things that really helped me to notice those things and recognize those things in some of my, whether it's runners or basketball players. And I feel like that's really enhanced my relationships with some of those athletes, is that, you know, that builds a trust, that builds a bond.
Yes.
And so, you know, even with Coach Becker, he's someone that I still talk to today, which, you know, it's 20 years later.
Yeah, that's really powerful, Damon, that Coach Becker saw your gifting. And we could even see that today. Your leadership is very evident today. And I believe also you have a story of how Coach Becker is really responsible for even Ahava had a hand, you know, in an indirect way, had a hand in Ahava as well.
Yeah. So, you know, Coach Becker, after I graduated from high school, he owned a business, which was a screen printing company. And he, you know, that company specialized in basketball uniforms because he was a basketball coach. And, you know, he wasn't very satisfied with what other companies were making in terms of uniforms and apparel. And so he said, "I can do that better." And so he started his own basketball uniform company and spirit wear and apparel. So a screen printing company. And so after I graduated from high school, he offered me a job. He said, "I want you to come work for me." And so I worked for him for like 5 or 6 years doing, I wore a bunch of different hats in helping to run the business. But one of the things that I did was some of the graphic design stuff and some of the screen printing stuff. And so later on, when our church decided that they wanted to start a business, you know, Pastor Barry approached me and said, "Hey, you know you have some experience with screen printing and design. Is that something that you would want to do with our church and start a business like that? And we have some seed money and we'd be interested in, you know, starting a business." And so that was something that I had experience in. I was a little bit, I was pretty excited about, because I felt like that was something that God had been leading me in terms of something he'd placed in my heart a few years before, was what would it look like if we started a graphic design firm and not, you know, it was more of a design firm to bring together some of the different creative people at our church to do things for him. Mm-hmm. And so it felt like this could be the start of that. So we started off with screen printing, and then that was the birth of Ahava.
Yeah.
And now, you know, some of the different projects that we're working on that I'm super excited about wouldn't have been able to been started had we not gone down that avenue of, you know, deciding to do screen printing, which wouldn't have happened if Coach Becker hadn't called me out on that first day of conditioning, you know? And so it's neat to see kind of God's hand in this whole journey.
Yes.
You know, and one of the projects that I'm super excited about that we're releasing right now is Brave and Beautiful, which is a publication to help keep young women and young girls out of the human trafficking. And so to see what God is doing in that and helping to, you know, prevent young girls from entering that industry that is so, you know, that industry is anti-God. I mean, that's anti-God's purposes for people. And so for us to play a part in that and to recognize, wow, we wouldn't have been able to participate in the way that we are had Coach Becker not done that. It's like, it's neat to see God's hand in this whole journey.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And it's amazing when I think of Coach Becker and his affirmation of you, Damon, I think of just the power of of words and the things that we say to people and the effect that that has. And I just want to quote Proverbs 15:25 that says, "How delightful is a timely word." Mm-hmm. And it sounds like throughout your relationship with Coach Becker, especially on the basketball team, that there were a lot of words of affirmation to go around to you.
Yeah, I feel very blessed to have been put in that situation. So I'm very thankful to the Lord that I've had those experiences.
Yes, yes. Wow, that's awesome. So I saved the best for last, and you have an amazing testimony of how God led you to Catalyst before Catalyst Christian Community even existed. So can you please retell that story for our listeners?
Okay, so that story is actually a very vivid, vivid story in my mind. And it goes actually back pretty far before I actually made the decision. So for me, I grew up at Cerritos Baptist Church. I started going when I was 4 years old. And then this story starts to kind of take place right around when I was 24. So I'd been going to Cerritos Baptist for about 20 years. And so around that time, Cerritos Baptist was growing quickly. You know, we were having 3 services. They were trying to figure out, is this something that's sustainable, or should we look for a larger facility, or what should we do? So they were trying to figure out, how can we accommodate all of these people that God is bringing to our church and not kill our staff, because that's a lot of extra work, you know? Mm-hmm. And so they looked at different facilities, they had looked at different things, and then it was kind of brought to Pastor Barry that, hey, maybe you should start a church and take some of our members with you, and that would help alleviate some of the issues that we have. And so that was the, I mean, I'm sure Pastor Barry has a lot more to say about that part of the journey, but again, this is my journey. So Pastor Barry decided that he's going to start a church. And so they started pitching that idea to the congregation. And one of the things was, is at that time, I was dating someone that was attending CBC also. And so they said, if you are in a relationship with someone and you can't both decide that you want to go with the church plant, then you should stay. So I looked at my girlfriend. I said, what do you want to do? And she said, well, I want to stay. And I said, okay, well, I guess we're going to stay, because even if I want to go, they said, if there's any disagreement, then you should just stay. So I said, okay, well, that kind of makes my decision for me. Mm-hmm. So I was pretty set on staying. I'd grown up at Cerritos Baptist. I was on staff. I was a junior high intern at the time. So I was pretty comfortable. I had no desire to necessarily leave. Mm. So early in, okay, I guess later than that, after that, we ended up breaking up. And it was pretty abrupt. It was pretty, it wasn't expected on my part. Mm-hmm. So we broke up. It was pretty hard for me. Then one day I was driving to church, and I can remember very vividly where I was. I was on the 605 freeway north, right in front of the Hawaiian Gardens Casino. And I'm driving, and I get this sense from the Lord. If Pastor Barry asks you to go with him to the church plant, you need to think about it. Not that I need to go, that I just need to consider it and think about it. I said, what? And then I got it again.
And for you, let me just ask you, was it an audible voice or just something you sense internally in your spirit?
Yeah, it was more of like an internal sense in my spirit. It just felt like it was an impression.
Yes.
I wasn't hearing it spoken, but that was really, it was pretty strong. Just, if Pastor Barry asks you to go, you need to think about it.
Yeah, it's very, like, very clear.
And yeah. And so I was okay. Yeah. Okay. So I drive to church, and I was driving to church early that day because I was a Sunday school teacher, and so I like to get my classroom prepared and then be there for when my kids show up. I didn't want them to show up before me, so I got there a little early. But kids from other classes showed up, and my class, nobody showed up. It was really weird, because normally my kids would show up on time.
Yeah.
So I'm waiting outside for them in the breezeway, and I'm waiting, and still nobody. It's probably 15 minutes after Sunday school is supposed to start, and I'm still sitting out there. And then Pastor Barry walks by, and we just start chit-chatting about some stuff. I don't even remember what we talked about. But then, you know, after a few minutes, he goes, so Damon, you know, I was going to ask you this later, but While we're talking, we're already talking about stuff, so maybe I'll just plant this in your ear. I've been thinking, would you be interested in coming to the church plant and working with our youth? Like, he's like, I know that you have a heart for families and children, but you have a lot of experience with youth, and we don't have anyone to do our youth right now, so I wanted to know if you wanted to do it. And I was like, oh my gosh, like, like, wow. And this is all the same day. Like, this is with probably within half an hour of me driving to church.
Yeah, and just to explain to the listeners, you had like a flabbergasted look on your face just now as you were explaining what
so
he said.
I was kind of like in shock, and I didn't know what to say. And so I said, Pastor Barry, you know, it's very interesting because, and so I've kind of recapped my story. So I said, you know, I'll think about it. He said, okay, I wasn't going to ask you until later, so I don't need a response right now.
Yeah.
But I just wanted to put it in your ear. And then one of my kids showed up, and so we went into Sunday school. That same afternoon, I was coaching Brett Harada's basketball team, and the game was over, and I was about to get in my car, and this van pulls up right behind my car, so I can't get out. And I look in my rearview mirror, and I look, and it's Nancy Harada, and she's waving at me, like, get out of your car and come talk to me. I'm like, uh-oh, what did I do? Did I not play Brett enough? Did I do something wrong? Like, so I get out and I go talk to her and I say, hey, Nancy, you know, how's it going? What's up? And she goes, well, I was going to ask you this later, but I saw your car right there and I just felt like I should ask you right now. Like, are you going to come to the church plant and work with the youth? And I was like, what? Like, did you talk to Pastor Barry today? And she was like, no, I haven't talked to Pastor Barry in a few weeks. Like, why? And so I kind of shared with her the whole thing. And I was like, so like, this is, you're the third person, you know, I had that experience with the Lord in the car, Pastor Barry this morning. And now you're asking me all on the same day. It's like, I think the Lord is trying to tell me something. So I emailed Pastor Barry later that day and I told him about Nancy. And I was like, so I'm pretty sure that I'm pretty sure the Lord is telling me I need to go.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I said, but there's one last thing. I just want to run it by my family. My parents have been going to CBC for a long time. I would be leaving my parents at CBC to go to the church plant. And then my uncle, I usually look to him as a spiritual leader too. So I said I wanted to have lunch with him and ask him what he thought too. So, you know, partially, you know, again, I was comfortable at Cerritos. So I was kind of hoping that one of them would have said, no, you should stay, because I was comfortable there. So both of them said, you know, my parents and Uncle Cyril said, I need to go. They're like, I think the Lord's telling you, you need to go. So
you think,
yeah, I was like, okay, I guess God, you don't have to keep beating me over the head. I'll go. And so yeah, I felt like the Lord really, really wanted me to be at Catalyst. And now looking back, it's like, I can see why, you know, I can see all of the ways that God has transformed me and blessed me in my life that wouldn't have been the same had I stayed. And so, yeah, I just really have a sense of like, God really wanted me to be here. And so something else that's been kind of cool that I shared with some people is that, you know, earlier we were talking about generational legacy and things like that.
Yeah.
One of the neat things for me is that, you know, my grandfather was one of the pastors at Gardena Valley, and my grandma was, you know, she's the organist for so many years at Gardena Valley. Mm-hmm. So they were influential members of their church at Gardena Valley. Cerritos Baptist was a church plant of Gardena Valley, and my parents were on the board at Cerritos Baptist, and so they were pretty influential at CBC. Yeah. And I've been able to be on staff at Catalyst, you know, which is in a church plant from CBC. So, you know, three generations of our family, three generations of churches, and just being able to be a part of what the Lord is doing in the generations has been such a blessing for me.
Yeah. Wow. That's powerful. Real powerful. And the other thing I see in you, Damon, is just a willingness to go. I mean, sure, you know, God gave you all these signs, but you had to be willing and open. And that's what I see in you as well. And for those that are listening that might be contemplating career changes or transitions in their life or department or job changes, what advice would you have for them on how to maneuver through the time that they're going through?
You know, one thing that I really feel like the Lord has been highlighting recently to me is just how much He wants to have a relationship and a dialogue with us. And so I think for me, the advice that I would give to someone that's in that situation would be really seek the Lord and not just, you know, tell Him what you want, but just give Him opportunity to speak back to you as well. You know, for me, in my scenario, I wasn't intentional about it. He just spoke.
Yeah.
But I feel like even if He didn't just speak, He still wanted me to know what He wanted for me. And so I feel like it was more, I wouldn't have listened at the time if I had, you know, sought it out. But I feel like now, if I was in that situation, I would say, Lord, what do you want? And wait for an answer.
Yes.
You know, wait on the Lord too, and not just be like, oh, well, I didn't get anything. I tried it. Oh, I spent my 20 minutes and He didn't say anything. So I'll just make this decision on my own, but really more seek the Lord to wait and persevere till He gives clarity.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. So I feel like it's been a cool journey for me, and I feel very blessed that, you know, I feel like there's certain roadblocks that I didn't have to face because of the legacy that was passed down to me. And so I feel like that's been something that has been on my heart for my family, but then also for our church, is how do we help the next generations to not experience some of the roadblocks that we had so that they can hear from the Lord more clearly and experience His goodness and His relationship and His life in a more clear, more simple, more straightforward, easier way.
Yes, yes. Wow. That's great advice. And that's a good way to close our time. So, Damon, I just want to thank you for being here as a guest on Catalyst Stories.
Oh, yeah. Thanks, John. You know, I really enjoy being on this side of the mic sometimes, too. So thanks for making this such an easy time for me. And I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, no, it was fun chatting with you. And I want to end our time by lifting up a prayer of thanksgiving for these wonderful testimonies and for our listeners as well. So
awesome. Let's do it.
Yeah, let's pray. Thank you, Jesus, for Damon's testimonies of your hand on his life. And I just want to thank you for the legacy left by a woman after your own heart in his grandmother. And Lord, may you help all of us to leave behind our own legacy of you in subsequent generational blessings to our families. And Lord, I also want to thank you for the Coach Beckers in our lives, Lord, who speak words of affirmation that encourage us, that bring out our giftings and our strengths and last a lifetime, as evident in Damon's life. And may you help us to speak genuine words of affirmation to those that we come in contact with. And finally, Lord, thank you for showing Damon's willingness and obedience to follow you and hear your voice and go wherever you would lead him. And help us to subsequently say yes to you, God, wherever you call us to go, knowing that you will always be with us and you will never leave and forsake us. And now, Jesus, may you use these testimonies in Damon's life to inspire all of us to become all that you created and called us to be in Christ Jesus. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen.
Amen. And so until next time, take the time to reflect on and share your God-given testimonies and see how God uses you to become a catalyst of encouragement and inspiration to others. God bless.